Hello and welcome to another episode of the STG podcast, where we speak about science, technology, gaming, and other stuff. In this episode, we are going to have the second part of our discussion about nuclear waste with Jarkko Stenfors from Posiva.
So we went through the encapsulation plant process. After that, the canisters are lowered to the underground facilities with the canister hoist. And of course, it's a really big equipment and safety related. So it's not a standard lift. Also, it is made with, of course, the mining regulations, but also the nuclear regulations.
So what does really it change for a normal crane or a nuclear approved crane? Is it a material thing or controls or both?
Actually, materials are as good as possible, of course, and we need all the material certificates that we can also validate that they are as good they are promised to be. But mostly it's going to affect to the design. So when we use the word redundant, it's two things. First of all, if you can, you just make a double that and double that. So if you have sensor that says that now they are overspeed. So if you have redundant system, you have two sensors, and both are saying that they are overspeed. If one of those sensors is cut off, then you cannot operate that machine. So all the nuclear related functions are doubled. If you don't you cannot double something, like you just have one drum with the hoisting ropes, then you just design that one thing to be so safe that it's not going to break.
Yeah, and I guess also there is much more checking during operation.
Yeah, during the design, during the manufacturing, during the commissioning, and then the operations, you have all kind of inspections and checks and like safety regulated things. Also, the radiation authority Stukis is in every phases when you are doing that equipment project. So it's really done in good manner.
Yeah, that's probably one of the reasons why it takes so long to do these things.
And most likely, of course, those are really expensive equipment when you do it like that.
Also, very short on the equipment still, it's how long do they last? Because, of course, the fuel is irradiating, but is it as much as the equipment inside the power plant, they are going to be changed much more frequently compared to these ones. Do you have some idea of the lifespan of this big equipment in there?
Actually, there are original equipment in nuclear power plants nowadays also.
Okay.
So I think we are talking about really well designed equipment, really with the good materials, and the nuclear power plant, and also we are going to have the encapsulation plant. Those are hospital or some food industry plants. So we are keeping those really warm, nice, well ventilated, well maintained, and so So I think that that's why we are trusting that the equipment are lasting at least 30 years. That's our design basis, that all the equipment must last 30 years. But still, I think those will be lasting 40, 50 years. The software changes are the biggest challenge, because the software is now changing like really in really really,
yeah, that
like
doesn't last 50 years.
no, if you look 10 years from now to the past, so the software were really different.
All the control software should have been written in let's say Fortran 77, because it's so old, ancient, and tedious that nobody wants to change that ever. So nobody can change it.
Yeah, we have thought that we are not going to use any fancy coding or fancy like software. We are using the really old fashioned and really
like it goes straight to the machine.
Mm. So I think we are not going to try to have those be like high tech. We are trying to make those last forever.
So one thing is that, of course, if you don't know how a nuclear power plant really works, because we're speaking always that the fuel is radioactive and all this kind of stuff, but inside the power plant, outside of the containment where the fuel is and where all the nuclear reaction happens and, well, all the operation, there is not really radiation outside of that.
Oh, no, not any.
Yeah. Just to be clear that, I mean, the radiation stays in the place where it's supposed to be, like people work in the power plant. That's not an issue.
We don't have many rooms in power plant either where are radiation, so most of the rooms in nuclear power plants are just not radiating at all. Also in our encapsulation plant, we have quite strict area where there are radiation when we are doing the process, when we are moving the nuclear fuel. But when there are no fuel inside encapsulation plant, there are no radiation. So I'm not going to like get the places messed or like. Are not spreading the radiation in inside our plants. So the radiation is like radio waves. So they
just stop. The rock is there to stop it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also when the fuel is inside the copper, I guess there is not very much anything coming out of the copper, like radiation wise.
Actually, there are.
Okay, so it's still.
Mostly the radiation is stopping to the copper outback. But for example, the neutron radiation is just like the waves are slowed down, mm-hmm. but the radiation. When the waves are slowed down, the radiation is making different harms. For example, if you have cobalt in some of the materials, for example, steels, if you have too much cobalt, the cobalt is activated. If you have that neutron radiation coming out from the copper, so that's why the copper is changing the radiation a bit, but the radiation is worse if you look only the activating.
Yeah, in a material point of view, like if you need to be material. Really careful. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we are handling the copper canisters, we must choose steels that have a low cobalt grade, for example. But you can be around the canisters inside 1 meter span. You can be 40 minutes.
Okay.
Then you have the annual dose, full.
Ah, okay.
So then you can
not something you want to hug.
No.
You should do social distancing to the copper canister.
But the distance is good. Also, if you have some kind of a shield like lead shield, it's good. And then if you are not going to spend a lot of time around the copper canisters, it's also good. But you can go around quite short time. You can go around the canisters and make some maintenance if you have some kind of emergency situation. So it's not so radiating anymore.
Okay. So then how does it go from canister? How do you bring them down to 450 meters, was it?
Yeah, it was the canister hoist, the big mine hoist, also designed with the nuclear regulations. It's 430 meters, the underground facilities, but insulation plant is more or less 20 meters high, so the hoist is doing the 450 meters more or less. The movements are really slow, so we have all the time in the world when we are lifting the canisters to downstairs. We use the forklift in encapsulation plant when we transfer the canisters to the hoist, and also downstairs in our final disposal plant we have also that kind of forklift. Those are like remote controlled forklifts, so we are controlling those also in the control room.
So nobody is really working downstairs?
No.
If not
no,
needed, of course.
Not around the canisters, no.
Yeah.
So we have, I think in encapsulation plant, if I remember right, there are 12 storage places to canisters. Downstairs we have 30 places. So it's more or less 1 year production that we have places for canisters.
Okay, so and you're digging all the time and you...
When all the places are like stored with full canisters, then we start the final disposal process.
Ah, okay, so that has not started yet.
No, so the final disposal is when you move the canister from the storage and put it to the final disposal holes. And the final disposal holes are in final disposal tunnels, and the final disposal tunnels are in our final disposal plant. Actually, we are now excavating that plant, but we had the construction license 2015, but actually we started the excavations 2004, and then we started digging the Onkalo facility, and main function to Onkalo was to have the research facilities that we are studying the rock, we are studying of course the final disposal environment but also the background water, the chemistry, all the like biological means, the rock strength and all the environmental issues they are underground. So 2010 we were in the depth of 430, and from then we started to make the technical facilities underground, and also we made a demo area which was like demonstration purposes, and we have done really remarkable demonstrations underground. One was the fist test. It was full-scale in situ system test, which was done in one of our demo tunnels. And actually we tested all the final disposal processes in that fist test. So first of all, we had the tunnel, we had the demonstration holes, and then we put the buffer blocks, buffer clay blocks, which is a bentonite clay. We put the buffer blocks into the hole, then we put the canister into the hole. Inside the canister, we don't have the spent fuel, but we had the like the heaters, and with the heaters we are now like simulating that what is going on when we put heating canisters to the bentonite buffer block, which is inside the final disposal hole, and the final disposal hole is in our repository. So we are measuring, of course, the pressures and the heat and all kind of stuff. The bentonite clay is I'm not an expert, but the bentonite clay is so that it is swelling a lot, like two times from the starting point.
And that is made on purpose, or is a problem of that?
Actually, we are pressuring the clay, bentonite clay, so that after it's getting water from the our repository groundwater, it is swelling, and then it's not like getting the water to the surfaces of our canister. So it's
okay,
done by purpose.
Interesting. And also, how long is gonna be the fuel heating up? Like inside,
not so long. I don't have to first, but first of all, when we are doing the final disposal, the heat amount is 1.8 kilowatts. So it's
okay.
It's more or less like a sauna oven. It's one fifth of sauna oven.
Yeah, so it's your sauna is hotter than the inside of the canister.
Actually, I have oven in sauna which is 11 kilowatts. So it's 10 times nice. 10 times warmer than one copper canister.
Okay, so basically we could use spent fuel as sauna heating material. That would be the new idea.
Actually, that idea has been also figured out, but we are not going to use that heat.
But that's basically what is used in the space mission outside, when you have to send probes far away. You basically put fuel in there that is heating up, and the heat is converted to electricity. So that's the joke, but it's actually it's used in the real world also. Like, so yeah, this is just a
side note.
Side note, yeah.
When you get the fuel out from the reactor, and when it's cooled down over the years, it's 1 of 1,000 the radioactive from the original.
Okay.
The 100 years, it's 1 to 10,000 of the original.
So it's quite much less what we like the spent fuel.
Yeah, but we have done the tests, all the tests, and we have all the prototypes. Also, I haven't spoke about the prototypes. Encapsulation plant equipment. I think we have really many prototypes made from that process. There are prototypes 1-to-1 size, but also we have prototypes which are like 1-to-2 size, so not so.
So, not so like we didn't speak before. How big is one of these copper canisters?
Copper canisters are the Loviisa canister is 3.6 meters. Saw 3.6 meters, and then the Olkiluoto 3 canister saw the longest ones. Those are over 5 meters, but I have the here. But that's the amount. And Olkiluoto 1 and 2 canister is 4.5 meters, but the hole, the final disposal hole, is 8 meters.
Yeah, okay, because of the clay around.
Yeah, and canisters, all the canisters, Olkiluoto 1 and 2, Loviisa 1 and 2, and Olkiluoto 3, those are 1 meter in meter.
Okay.
But then the height varies.
Yeah, so now it's easy to imagine what's going on all of this process.
Now I have the figures. Yeah, so the Loviisa canister is 3.6, then the Olkiluoto canister is 5.2, and Olkiluoto 1 and 2 is 4.8. But the amount of canisters when you now stop the production on time with the Olkiluoto and Loviisa existing power plants, and if you calculate the Olkiluoto 3 like designed lifetime, then you should have the canisters Loviisa about 700, Olkiluoto 1 and 2 about 1200, and Olkiluoto 3 about 900 canisters.
Okay, this is quite a massive amount to take care of.
Most likely 3,000 with like the operational time when you calculate now, but of course we are expanding that time, so there could be like 4,000 canisters.
Yeah, but of course this is in the next 50, 60, 70 years, so it's
actually
sounds like a lot, but I mean it's a long time also.
I think over 100 years. 100.
Okay.
Yeah. Together.
So there's gonna be a multi-generational project.
Yeah, and that is one challenge. Also, we have some like time between Olkiluoto 1 and 2, Loviisa 1 and 2, and then the Olkiluoto 3. We must shut down the facility and make some changes to the encapsulation plant process before getting the Olkiluoto 3 fuel in. So there is a big challenge when you try to have those experts around and try to have the knowledge, like going from the experts to another.
Yeah, you need to really transfer well the knowledge to the new people. Otherwise, even some small software problem could be a huge problem if people don't really know what's going on.
Yes, and if they don't know why we have done these like save as possible and so on. So if
yeah, I guess there is a lot of taking notes of what's going on.
Actually, documentation.
Yeah,
all is documented. Yes. Oh yeah, we have all the prototypes. Also, our underground equipment, we have prototypes, and we tested and we validated those in the FIST test. And actually, the FIST test was, I think it succeeded quite well. So we found some things that we could make much better, but also we found that our final disposal process around the copper canister, it is quite smoothly and it is really safe and reliable. So there we used our prototype canister installation vehicle, which was making the final disposal really good. So the copper canisters were installed to the demonstration halls really, really well. So we are now.
So now you're sure that's going to work in the future?
Yes, we are really sure.
Okay, and this is so to close this long discussion, it was really interesting, but there is the closing of the repository and the futures thing that is really interesting to me, because that's something that probably even us, that we are in our 30s now, we are not going to see happening. And so it's going to be the generation after us probably that is going to start to see this kind of processes to be over. And we were discussing about this in some courses in the university that, of course, now we are doing this for taking care of the fuel now. And everybody's thinking like this needs to last 100 years. So everything is done. But we cannot know really how it's going to be in 100 years and how it's going to be the situation in the country or in the place where all of this is. In 100 years, will they know how to take care of this, or what happens in 200 years? So what are the, like, what kind of precaution are made, or what thinking is made in when you like design things to last some like 100 years that we have no idea what's really gonna happen?
Yeah, actually we are making the operations like 100 years from now, but then when we are closing the repository, we are filling the tunnels with bentonite and rock, the central tunnels with rock, and then finally the driving tunnel with rock. Do we write the sign that they are spent nuclear fuel, please don't dig, or something? So do we leave some messages that this is really dangerous, or do we just, you know, make the environment like never have anything happen in our Olkiluoto Island? So do we trust that there are not any kind of creatures digging that point? Also, we have simulated the permafrost situation. So if when the ice age is coming 50,000 years from now, we have calculated. So there are 1 or 2 kilometers of snow and ice on top of us, and the rock is pressed, and the rock is pressed. Now it's 450 meters. Then it could be like 350 meters, and the pressure is huge inside of the repository. So we have also calculated and simulated that, and we have simulated pretty well 100,000 years, but we have also simulated 1 million years. That they are not going to be such like happenings that our fuel is not safe. So we trust that the fuel is safe when it's kept in the repository, but of course none of the creatures must not dig the fuel out, because
So even with the ice age and the compression, then it still should be fine.
Yes, that has been simulated.
Okay.
So we have also done studies in Greenland in permafrost conditions, and we have studied what is going on in the rock when the ice is the permafrost is on top of the ground, and when it's going off from the ground, because then the pressure is getting loose, and then the rock is moving. So we have had really much simulations around that.
Okay, Juhana, come on, shoot one of your future questions.
Well, I have
not a question,
some random rambling. I was wondering about sort of the problem of that you mentioned. Should you sort of put some signs that say don't go there, or should you not do that? Should you make it sort of seem as natural and normal as possible? And all of these sort of bring interesting speculations to mind. If you think that the one good example is if you tell a group of humans that you should not do something or don't look into this because it's for your own good, then they will obviously look into that. So if the information is lost at some point that the cavity contains some radioactive fuel, and the only information is that it's bad, don't go there, then it's pretty obvious that someone will try to, or it's going to sort of, people are going to make it into a myth and start wondering what is there, why shouldn't we go there, what's this experiment, is there something sinister going on? I mean, almost anything can happen in 100,000 years that this is sort of supposed to be contained. This has so interesting applications for so many science fiction stories.
You are really right. The humans act like that, but we don't even calculate that humans exist from like 100,000 years from now. But there are some creatures.
Let's say in 100 years.
Yeah. So, you are right. We are most probably not making any signs. And also, the site selection was one of like it was a design basis. There must not be any like used metals or gold or diamonds in that final disposal plant. So it must be as poor as possible that it is not interested.
People really don't want to go there.
Yes, it's not interested. So that was the main idea.
One other thing that sort of popped into my head is that sort of if no sign is left at all, and let's say in 1,500 years, some sort of, I can already see this as a movie or as a story. Someone is sort of, I don't know, moving there and having some sort of sensor. So, you know, some normal person is walking in the nature and using some sort of sensor that they can, I don't know, you can imagine them having a metal detector, but, you know, because it's sci-fi concept, it has to be something more sci-fi. So they're walking around and they notice something weird. For example, somehow detect the seam between the bedrock and the cavity, and then sort of they start digging into that, and then some scientists get into this, and then they sort of start probing the site with some, I don't know, for example, sonic waves or sounds or something else with which they can figure out that there is actually a cavity, and this again sort of brings the situation where they are wondering what is here, why is it so deep, why is there no records of this. Yeah,
and how bad it is if this is discovered also in 1,000 years, is it still really bad? Or
the radiation is not bad, but of course it's contaminating like hell if you dig that out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, in that sense. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think in this concept, if sort of the people or the humans at that point have the technology and the ability to start excavating all that stuff and start to, I mean, even find it, then they probably also have some sort of capabilities of sensing radiation and figuring out what radiation is.
Yeah, you would imagine.
So pretty soon they would find out that there's something that radiates and so on. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool to think that we dig now in 2,000 years later, we find the Roman stuff in Italy all the time when they build roads.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to think what happens in 2,000 years when the whatever civilization is still there. Then they dig this, like, what the fuck are these people doing? Why are all this radioactive crap over here?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Or
because, of course, a nuclear fusion is going to be 50 years in the future, also 2,000 years from now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a joke.
Yeah, it's always 50 years in the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or imagine in 4,000 years, people are making comparisons to the pyramids, which were 4,000 years from now.
Yeah. That's true.
And there will be documentaries about the weird Finnish caves where something is mummified, but we don't know what.
Yeah, I guess we could go forever about future scenario, but this was really, really interesting. And well, Jarkko, thanks for joining us for this and really talk to us and explain how the process work. I hope
thank you guys,
everybody got this clear enough. At least from my side, this is pretty clear what happens there, and there is infinite amount of hours that we could speak about this, but of course there is a limit. So yeah, thanks again. And do you want to, like, if someone wants to know more about this or something, where they can reach you or possibly as a company, do you have some recommendation?
Yeah, of course. We have, everybody has, but we have the YouTube channel, Posivo, and also we are in this like non-carbon energy production. So of course we want to make like a social acceptance to the nuclear power. So please contact, of course, me, but also we have the PR department that are making all the like the information speeches, presentations, and so on. If somebody wants to hear more about this.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that most of the people are kind of afraid of something they don't know, and when you know how well these things are done, then you maybe think differently that, okay, maybe it's much safer than I expect, and it's the point is to make it safer.
That's true, but
all the time.
But in Finland, the acceptance is now more or less 60%, and against of nuclear are most likely 30% of the people. So this is really much accepted, and this is non-carbon energy production. So I think we are in the good side.
Yeah, and considering that, I mean, we discussed now for more than hour and a half about how you take care of the waste, and this is the only waste, basically. People do salt water and this waste that you have a plan to get rid of. So if everything goes to plan and everything is planned to be in a certain way, then that's it. You get electricity and that's the plan for the future. There is no real pollution to the air for sure. So yeah, that's it. Thanks for getting this far into this second part of this discussion. And for us, we have, of course, our Twitter all the time, STG_podcast. If you want to hear more of this, I'm now going to ask Jarkko about who I can ask about more things in the field. So hopefully we get more episodes. But yeah, thanks and see you next time. This was the second and last part of our discussion. I hope you enjoyed. As usual, come on Twitter at STG_podcast if you have any comments or you want to talk to us. But anyway, until next time, have a nice morning, day, night, wherever you are. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye all.